Well, good morning, folks. It is the first day of July already, and it is hot. So be careful out there. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with Arthur Laughlin, Councilman, District 11, on the North Shore. We'll talk about the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office race. They've called for the election to be in November. We'll talk about that race and their concerns. It's a very short timeline, obviously, for this election, and we'll have a frank discussion about where they go from here. At the top of the hour, Mike Fitz, the president of Tulane University. This is incredibly exciting. This project has kind of just been floating around out there for a while. There were some difficulties with the group that was named to be the lead developer. And I got to tell you, it's really refreshing that Tulane University has stepped up. They're taking on a lot of risk. But this may be, this project and the LIT, I believe to be the two most transformational projects maybe in the history of the city of New Orleans. And they're affecting two different sectors of our economy, but two very, very important sectors of our economy. And we must have them succeed. We are facing a lot of different challenges, and we'll talk about that in just a moment with some of my opening comments. GNO Inc. Hour at 11 o'clock. Matt Wolf is going to join us. He's the VP of Communications. Got a lot to report out on there. We'll also visit with Plaquemines Parish Councilman Ronnie Newsom and Chris Schultz. And we'll talk about a number of the projects that they have going on in Plaquemines. Again, for them, transformational, Venture Global, Gulfstream LNG. We'll talk about the difficult with the Peters Road Bridge and rail bypass and the port director search and new direction for the port of Plaquemines as well. Rachel Sheffield with the Heritage will join us. Is the American dream changing, or have our expectations changed? The whole notion of young adults and marriage, some alarming statistics, and we'll talk about that, about how differently folks are looking at things. And you're going to be surprised about Gen Zers. Those are individuals that were born between 1997 and 2012, right? About the average age of when they get married as opposed to when we were going into high school, coming out of high school, my generation. Huge difference. And a whole different way of looking at things. It's a very interesting article. And, you know, one of the issues that we have here when we were talking to the interim president of UNO yesterday, she brought it up, is that, you know, the population loss here in the greater New Orleans area is something that we have to come to grips with and is presenting some serious challenges for us. And, you know, we got to figure out how to reverse the trend that we have. When you think back that the city at one point in time had almost 700,000 people in it. When you think about New Orleans East and the number of people that lived out there. I lived out there as a young adult. I know how vibrant it was. I worked at the mall out there in high school. So I know how vibrant it was out there as well. And a lot of that was driven by population. Right. And we got to get back to those numbers if we're going to turn things around here in the city. And it's really, really important. There are those that believe that one of the ways that we should do this is through immigration. Right? We do need a robust immigration policy to help along those lines. But that is not the panacea solution. Because the challenge is there is, you know, we're not doing it what's in the best interest of our economy and who we're allowing into the country. So that creates a number of burdens as well for us. and not necessarily that works in the best interest of this country. And, you know, I think that's a dividing line on this issue for many folks in this country, and the way that they feel about these issues is, should we be selfishly motivated? So should we do things that are in the best interests of this country and allowing certain people in and others not so much? Economic credentialing is one way of doing it, to make sure that they are producers as opposed to consumers of public services and things of that nature. And we're not financing their families and their life. Taxpayers, that is. And it's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate concern on the birthright citizenship issue. You know, there seems to be about an equal number of people in favor of that as opposed to that. But nobody's really studied the downstream implications of that. There are a number of countries around the world that oppose birthright citizenship in their democracies and other types of government. And there are very few that actually grant it for good reason. Because, you know, when you talk about the social welfare safety net programs of having someone that's actually born in this country can avail themselves of a lot of these benefits, and interestingly, maybe not necessarily live here. Yes, you heard that correctly. Maybe not necessarily live here. And you begin to wonder as to whether or not that's the model that we should be thinking about. When we talk about immigration reform, you know, a lot of folks don't want to talk about the downstream implications economically of certain things, the way that they ultimately play out and how we dole out funds for individuals. And it's something that really needs to be explored. It needs to be talked about. It needs to be debated. And we have to decide. Now, I don't know about you. I go back to this priority thing, right? For me, one of the biggest priorities should be the funding of Social Security. Yes, and that's a social safety net program. Ain't no doubt about it. I get it. But it's there, and there are a lot of people, a lot of lower income individuals that rely on that money, and it helps with their retirement, their retirement planning, and everything else. And it's running out of money fast. It's coming to the end quick, and we're not doing anything. And quite frankly, in my view, every extra dollar we have, every extra opportunity we have to right that ship, we should be doing it. There's not going to be one lump sum of money that's going to save that program. And it's amazing how quick we think about cutting benefits, right? I mean, really? All of a sudden, we're cutting. On the one hand, we're setting up sanctuary cities. We're giving out all of these dollars. We're providing sustenance outside of the traditional norms here that U.S. citizens have been entitled to. But because of laws prohibiting others from getting those benefits, we're creating this whole subculture out there of government financing for individuals. And meanwhile, the one program that everyone is going to ultimately end up relying on to some extent, we want to cut those benefits. How do we square that up? And you know, it's funny, when I see folks that are interviewed to talk about these issues, nobody ever brings that up. We are quick to say that we have to cut the benefits in Social Security. We are quick to say that we have to modify the Medicare plans. We are quick to say that we have to do all of that. And by the same token, we're out there advocating for enhanced and increased benefits for those who are not otherwise legally entitled. How do we square that up? How do we square up in this country? And there was a huge debate in Congress between Jamie Raskin and the gentleman from New York's name escapes me now, over sanctuary cities. That we have allowed cities in this country to set up themselves as a sanctuary in contravention to federal law. How do we square that up when we talk about the rights that we have as citizens and, you know, we basically offended all of the parents there who have had their children murdered by illegal immigrants, saying that this is the third time that we're here as a committee listening to this. We have better things to do. Really? Do you have better things to do than to protect citizens? Since when? How does that work? Where did we lose our way? Where U.S. citizens have now moved to the back seat. And we have others who are sitting in the front seat. And the priorities of those sectors of the community far outweigh and are greater than the priorities of our own citizens. When did we lose our way? When did we lose our way when folks now want to eliminate immigration, eliminate borders, eliminate deportations, eliminate all of the structural safeguards that are in place for an ordered and structured society? Don't hold criminals accountable. Close prisons, close jails. Attack individuals over conditions in a penal facility that when you go in, yes, the facilities there are less than if you live in an apartment or live in a home. What did you expect? You've committed, in some cases, atrocities on society at large. In other cases, you've stolen from society. In other cases, you've impacted society. And the burden should be that we provide you with the same standard of living that you had outside. Since when? And thank my audience, Mike Lawler, that's right, from New York. I appreciate it. How did we lose our way? Where are we actually headed? And what is that going to look like? Free this, free that. We talked to Guy Williams the other day about rent freezes. We're going to freeze rent. Contrary to their own rent control board recommendations, he overrode their recommendations and said, "No, we're not going to give any increases." A million apartments impacted by that rent freeze, and they wonder why people are having to live in apartments that are subpar conditions because they won't let the owners finance the improvements to bring them up to code, to bring them up to today's standards because they're freezing the rent. They want people to basically live their life as though they are a charity, right? Where did we lose our way that the likelihood of us, you, me, and everyone else giving up 60 to 65% of our income for the sake of the greater good, that we can't even keep half? Where did we lose our way? In this ocean of entitlements, that are floating around, and this notion of, you know, separation, which I thought that went by the wayside with the Civil Rights Act and everything else. Well, no, we're going right back to it. You go on some of these college campuses, we have housing separated by race. Because for whatever reason, there's too many differences, according to some people, among racial and ethnic groups that we can't live in the same building together. When did we lose our way? And all that everyone fought for, made sacrifices for, fought for these rights and privileges, women having the right to vote, women having the right to play sports, Title IX. How many years did we toil through those issues? And now we refer to women's sports as a so-called sporting events. Yes, for the sake of those that might want to identify as a female. Where did we lose our way where we apologize in the news to say the words biological male, biological female? How did we get to this point where we actually have news agencies warning people in advance that they are going to use those words as they appear in a Supreme Court decision, and that's the excuse that they want to offer, and the only reason that they're able and capable of saying the word biological male, biological female? Where did we lose our way? The sensitivities that we have, the ultra sensitivities that we have in society, standing in the way of being able to say biological male, biological female? Are we led to believe today that there is no such creature? It doesn't exist? So much so that we are apologizing in advance of saying it? Where did we lose our way? I don't know, just sometimes pointing out the obvious here. We failed to do this. But of all the years of science and study of human anatomy and procreation and everything else that goes along with it, where did that all go? Because a group of individuals say, I don't want to be a biological male. I want to identify as a female. So based on that and that alone, we've lost our way? How could that be? How could that be? It's amazing to me that in this country, we will spend billions upon billions, if not trillions, in medical research that reaches conclusions that are profound, life-changing, life-saving, and everything else. And we can have a group of individuals that want to identify as something or decline the outcomes of this medical research, reject the outcomes of medical research, and then we all collectively in society have to make excuses to talk about it. When and where and how did we lose our way? I hope it happens soon that I wake up from this nightmare. We'll be right back. You know, it's interesting how folks think so differently. My generation, as opposed to Gen Zers, those are individuals born between 1997 and 2012. And recently, our guest, Rachel Sheffield, wrote an article about have rising living standards pushed marriage out of reach. And she joins us now. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Rachel, I really enjoyed your article. Some very interesting statistics about how differently we think about things from like the 1970s to the present day. Talk to us about your findings and what you wrote about in your article.
Yeah, so we've seen marriage decline for decades now. It's been continuing to fall, and that's particularly among younger generations. Right now, if projections hold, one third of Gen Z will remain single by the time they reach age 45, or will never marry at all. And so, kind of to delve into this question of like, what's going on here? Why are we seeing these declining marriage rates? A lot of survey data, if you ask people, one point that often comes up is that people will say it's too expensive to marry. And so, I kind of looked at that and said, okay, well, are we really, has there been a decline in earnings among younger adults, right? And, the reality is no. I mean, sure, we've had certain, periods of economic downturn, but generally speaking, earnings have gone up for some groups. They've stayed, kind of flat or up and down for kind of folks in the middle. But so I thought, well, maybe that what people are really saying when they say that, they don't have enough money to get married is that the expectations for what you're supposed to have, for what your material living conditions are supposed to look like, when you get married, have those shifted? And so that's what I looked at. And, in the 1970s, we can look at that data from there and say, okay, when a young people got married, when they were the kind of, married adults at the median first age of marriage, they definitely had less. The vast majority of them did not own a home. They were typically living in a two-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment or home of some sort, but probably an apartment. They were renters. And they had far fewer amenities than adults today. When we look at the average married man today, about 60% are homeowners. Their homes are bigger, around three bedrooms and at least two bathrooms. And they have, far more amenities compared to their peers in the past. And so I think, maybe what we're seeing here is that basically, in the past, people got married when they had a lot less. Marriage was kind of seen as this cornerstone of adult life. You something where you had, you had the beginnings and you built from there. Today it's shifted to more towards a capstone view of marriage where you have to, have this expectation or this pressure or this feeling that somehow you have to have all these things in place that, adults in the past typically didn't have well into marriage or even sometimes maybe never. So anyway, that's kind of the summary of what I was, looking at here in my research.
As you were describing the folks in the 70s, I read through it, and I mean, that was me almost to the T. I mean, I was 21. I didn't have central air conditioning.
Yeah.
I did not have a washer and dryer in my apartment. We had a community washer and dryer that we went to. I think the nicest amenity we had at our apartment complex was a swimming pool, right? We didn't have anything else. We still had a dial phone, and we didn't have. So I was kind of chuckling and laughing as I was reading through this. But, I think back and I thought that a lot of the things that we wanted to get and to have I always thought was easier if there was somebody else there with you sharing the experience and in your life. And it seems as though that's not the case. As you said, it's the capstone now. They want to have all of those things. They want to have a lot of things socked away, maybe some money socked away as well, before they ever make that commitment.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, that this view has shifted. And, I mean, there's some problems with that. For one, it makes marriage appear to be out of reach for a large, portion of the population. And also, the reality is that marriage, as you say, does come with a lot of benefits. And, if you look at the research, in fact, there's what researchers call like the marriage premium for men, which shows that marriage seems to has a causal impact on men's income. So that when men get married, it looks like, marriage actually boosts, causes a boost in their income. And, you can say, why is that? Is it just that men who are more, financially have more financial promise are more likely to get married? But in fact, the research says, there's something else. And, you can imagine that if you have kind of that commitment and that kind of that responsibility that you need to provide for a family, that you'd be more likely to kind of work hard, move forward. And also just having someone by your side, I think, can make life easier. You can share responsibilities of life together. But I don't know if a lot of people get that message of, that marriage comes with these benefits. And it's not just financial. It's connected with, better health and emotional well-being and, for adults. And then, of course, for children, there's numerous benefits that children raised in married parent households do better on, a variety of outcomes as well. So I think that message needs to get out there so that people kind of have that confidence and that perspective on the importance of marriage.
Earlier in my monologue, I talked about a couple of issues and challenges that we have here in the city of New Orleans and its population decline. One of the byproducts of what you point out in your article is that we're struggling here in the United States. And it's not only here, it's actually around the world. They're struggling because of this mindset as it relates to population growth. And without population growth, we're kind of stuck on stuck, right? And the impact on our economy is huge.
Yeah, right. And that's another, right, exactly. You bring up another important point about the declining marriage rates is that as marriage declines, then also the birth rate goes down with it. Birth rates in the U.S. have been declining, every year, basically for the last decade and a half, we've just kind of seen this continual fall in birth rates. And that is very much tied to marriage rates, because married couples on average have more children than unmarried. Of course, it's good that children are born within marriage. That's for the best. But so then as we see marriage drop, we see declining birth rates, and that comes with a lot of repercussions economically, but even just when to have that you think about elderly adults having children there to take care of them, adult children to take care of them in their older years, that's a big piece of the puzzle. And I think just the way that even people orient their lives when you have children versus when you don't, you tend to kind of connect more with your community as you point out, this declining birth rates is an important piece of that.
With access to today's technology, I mean, I've seen this with my children. They're 30 and 29, and they're friends, and having just kind of casually observed the manner in which they communicate. These interpersonal relationships, I mean, when I was coming up, it was everything, right? Mm-hmm. Today, I mean, you're sitting at the same table and they're texting across the table. It's like everybody is communicating in code almost, that they don't want others to participate in a conversation with you. And it's kind of a strange dynamic, and I wonder how much that, and your thoughts on how much you think that influences what you're pointing out here.
Yeah, no, I think that there is definitely that technology and smartphones and, a piece of the puzzle. I mean, I think that, well, when it comes to marriage, when it comes to dating, dating rates have gone down. I would have to, assume that, yes, as people are spending more time on their phones and rather than interacting in real life, that kind of erodes the, just kind of erodes those skills and kind of that just, knowledge of how do you even, approach someone and take those risks to ask someone on a date. I think it's a significant.
And I don't know about you, but when I hear about people talking about an AI partner.
Yeah. There's some wild things happening in our world.
I can't wrap my head around that at all. what are we talking about?
Yeah. You feel like you're in a very strange, brave new world.
I feel like I'm in an alternate universe.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And, it shows, it shows that, human beings, there is this desire to connect, and yet we are struggling to even, with these, to build these human, relationships, kind of those on ramps to marriage have eroded, dating and even just having that ability to meet people and interact in ways that are necessary to get you from point A to point B. So, lots of challenges.
Sometimes I wonder as well, the country is pretty divided right now. I mean, I was reading this most recent YouGov poll about where, Republicans, Democrats fall on how they feel about, where we are in the country.
Yeah.
Like 50-something% of Democrats said they'd rather live abroad somewhere. And most of those people have never even experienced living abroad. They have no clue about the fundamental differences, but yet that's what they desire. I wonder if this translates, though, into a fear of bringing children into the world today with this uncertainty and unknown and kind of angst and anxiety about where we are in society today.
I think you're right. I think when we look at marriage and how it's shifted, this delay in marriage, this putting it off until you have so much established and have your education and your career established and maybe you own a home, because I think young people have seen, in our society, a lot of breakdown of the family, high divorce rates, people not, maybe they've come from families where their parents were never married at all. And so there's, marriage has been, there's this kind of perspective that, okay, I need to protect myself just in case. I can't really rely on marriage the same way that I could. And so, even if you are, going to get married, it's become, you're doing these things to kind of protect yourself from that. And then that leads to delayed marriage or marriage never happening at all. So I think the fear aspect is definitely real.
Well, I can honestly say in my case, I am much better, as an individual because of my wife and because of the life that we have shared together. There's no doubt about it. I couldn't even imagine what it would be like not having that, right? Seems to run counter to the way a lot of folks are thinking today as well.
Yeah.
And, in my monologue, I asked the question, when did we and how did we lose our way? And it seems as though this is kind of another way that we've lost our way here. It's interesting as to how this is progressing in today's world.
Yeah.
Loved your article. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time, your insight. Rachel Sheffield with the Heritage Foundation. Have a great 4th of July weekend.
You too. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504 260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. All right, folks. We got a lot coming your way in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll visit with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications. Got a lot to talk about. But we'll also visit with Plaquemines Parish Councilman Chris Schultz and Ronnie Newsom, council member there as well, about a lot that's going on in Plaquemines Parish. Venture Global, Gulfstream LNG, Peters Road Bridge, Rail Bypass. Embarking on a new search for the port director and a new direction for the port there in Plaquemines Parish as well. Part of this region, Plaquemines, St. Bernard, Orleans, Jefferson, St. Tammany, vital for all of us, St. Charles Parish, the River Parishes, this whole region really vital for all of us to be able to succeed if we're going to move from a third-tier city to a second-tier city. Goes back to this population growth, that issue and challenge that I've talked about that is so very, very important. And we follow up that conversation in the 12 o'clock hour with President Mike Fitz from Tulane University. Really excited about, I just got to say it, about the risk that they're taking. This is maybe a little bit outside of their main lane of travel, but things don't just happen. You got to make them happen. And I'm a graduate of Tulane Law School. I'm very proud of Tulane University taking this on. This is one of those transformational projects. This one, if we succeed here, or when we succeed here, because I'm confident that we will, this is huge for us. Truly. And it's obvious. I was watching one of his interviews, Mike Fitz, that is, and it's obvious that they have that same belief. They've doubled down and bet on themselves. I love that. I love that about them doing so. And we need to make sure that they do succeed. And we need to make sure that we become the biggest cheerleaders for this as well, because it's so very important to the future and the viability of this place that we call home, the city of New Orleans. Sometimes we're, and I'm guilty of it too, we're not the best cheerleader. We need to be. We got a lot of issues, though, that we got to resolve, and they seem to be piling on all the time. Where we're just not doing our homework. We're not dotting our I's, crossing our T's. I mean, we watch things, hearings before the council on so many different fronts where, it seems as though the city organizations historically haven't really done their homework. They don't have a good understanding of whether or not they have reasonable expectations of certain technologies or not. I don't know how we get into a position where we're funding and financing huge projects, and we're not sure how it's all going to work out in the end, and we haven't taken into consideration the frailties of certain technologies that just exist, not only here, but around the world. And, it's like we just look right over it. We don't stare the obvious in the face and walk right around it. It's mind-numbing to me that this continues to occur over and over and over again. All right, folks, we'll be right back. Stay with us. So, folks, when the storm hits and your power goes out, don't you want to feel confident that your home and family will be okay? I know I love that feeling. Don't get caught in the heat and dark this summer. When backup power from WWL and Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, we're giving away a Generac GP6500 portable generator, a nearly $1,000 value right now. Enter at WWL.com/contest. Win peace of mind from Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, just like last month's winner, Francis Honey Pearson of Madisonville. Because when the power goes off, Craig comes on with WWL. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Matt Wolf from G&O Inc. He is the VP of Communications there. We'll also visit with Plaquemines Parish Councilman Chris Schultz and Ronnie Newsom. Got a lot more coming your way, so stay tuned. This is Newell on WWL.